You know that illustration showing a series of progressively larger fish in line, mouth to tail, the tiny goby on the left, the humongous whale shark on the right? Well, that simplistic image is, I'm embarrassed to say, precisely how I thought of aquatic food chains for quite some time. I never considered roles for crabs, shrimp, or plants, and certainly not for microorganisms, and I never even wondered what that goby had eaten for breakfast. But then, boom. In August 1985, oceanographers at Woods Hole published a dazzling story in Science magazine, where I was working, that jolted my brain out of its intellectual hibernation. I can still see the vivid, glossy photograph of Riftia, the giant red tube worms that were flourishing at hot springs that bubbled up through a rift in the ocean floor. Hanging out with Riftia a mile and a half from the sea surface were specialized clams, mussels, shrimp, limpets, anemones, fishes, and worms. The whole vent ecosystem was powered by chemosynthetic bacteria. They use simple chemicals as their energy source, the way land-based photosynthetic bacteria use the sun. The crabs down there were not constrained, as I had been, to envision food chains as linear. They were scuttling around, eating mussels and tube worms and the bacteria which they scraped off the walls of the tubes. The scientists found evidence that vent-based communities had been going strong down in the deep for at least 200 million years. A particular vent might shut down after 10 or 20 years, but the organisms luxuriantly cast forth their larvae, ensuring their species' survival. I started thinking again about those ruby tube worms and their buddies while reading about a man who hiked through the southwestern deserts searching for water sources. He'd cross the most parched land and then discover a pool, a spring, water pockets, a creek. Wherever he found water, he found life. Imagine an isolated puddle containing just a cup and a half of water, teeming with swimming flatworms and larvae of tiny flies and mosquitoes. Imagine island-like pools in bare rock loaded with fairy and tadpole shrimp. Miracle enough that the author found the water, but how did those organisms do it? The desert is not like the deep sea where progenitors can ride the waves from vent to vent. Desert water is discontinuous. Apparently, a few desert organisms hitch rides in wind and rain. Others travel inside or on insects, birds, and toads. But the most intriguing are the organisms that long ago adapted to drought by simply drying up when their water sources did. They would enter states of extreme hibernation, and by extreme, I mean they could lie dormant for centuries. When the water came back, they did too. In the case of the tadpole shrimp, this adaptation works so well that not a single physical feature has changed in 200 million years. I find it incredible that the freshwater shrimp and their distant saltwater cousins have both existed for 200 million years, yet in all that time they've never met, as I do with my cousins, to enjoy a leisurely long cool drink together. And poignantly, were they actually to meet today, it would surely be Jonah style, deep in the belly of the biggest feeder on the human food chain, someone sampling a menu's exotic offering, the mixed shrimp cocktail.